Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to the All Sides Reporter Roundtable, an hour where we catch up on the political news of last week and preview the week ahead. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Joining me this week on the roundtable, Ohio Capital Journal reporter Marty Schladen. Welcome back, Marty.
Good morning, Amy.
Jeremy Pelzer, chief politics reporter for Cleveland.com. Welcome back, Jeremy.
Hey, great to be here.
And Shane Stegmiller, reporter for Hannah News Service. Welcome, Shane.
Good, very chilly morning to you.
I know. I appreciate you all braving the cold and coming in. So Governor DeWine indicated last week that he will sign a bill that regulates intoxicating hemp. He called it a major victory and says it will keep juiced up hemp away from children who can buy it at convenience stores and gas stations right now. And he's been lobbying hard for lawmakers to act on this, especially with products packaged to look like candy. Shane, where are we at right now? So the governor kind of basically endorsed it, said he's going to sign it. Did he actually sign it yet?
No, it just went to him about midweek. So the bill itself, which is Senate Bill 56, finally passed through the Senate. So it went through both chambers, just to give a quick rundown. It went through both chambers. They didn't agree on it. It went to conference committee. Right before Thanksgiving, the conference committee finished its report. The House did not want to come back this month, so they quickly moved it out. The Senate still had to weigh in on the conference report. They did so last Tuesday. So I believe it was Wednesday that they sent the bill to DeWine, and then he has 10 days to sign it. Thursday, he did say he will sign it, but I do not believe he has done so yet. I haven't looked at my email this morning, but it's my understanding he is not.
Jeremy? So this bill has been more than 2 years in the making since Ohio voters passed Issue 2 back in 2023 to legalize recreational marijuana. It deals with two different cannabis products. One is hemp and the other is marijuana. And the difference between hemp and marijuana is basically the amount of THC, which is the active ingredient in marijuana. If there's lower levels, it's hemp, and there's higher levels, it's marijuana. So for hemp, up until now, it's largely been unregulated. It was inadvertently legalized on the federal level in 2018 when Congress passed this industrial hemp. They relaxed regulations on that, and that opened the door to things like these THC drinks you can now buy in gas stations or even bars around Ohio. And this, under this bill, if DeWine ends up signing it, it will outlaw those THC drinks, 5 milligrams of THC or above, after 1 year, so at the end of next year. And anything above 0.4% THC concentration hemp products would be banned outright unless it's sold in a marijuana dispensary. So basically, it allows lower level THC derived from hemp products to be sold, but anything higher than that would only be allowed to be sold in a dispensary.
See, now I thought I read that THC-infused drinks were still allowed, that lawmakers are sympathetic to business owners who lobbied to get these drinks accessible to adults.
For another year.
Oh.
So at the end of next year, they will be banned. Now, that's roughly at the same timeline as Congress finally acted and said, oh, we didn't mean to open the door to all these products back in 2018. So they've acted, and so to close the door on that. And now state lawmakers, in response to that, are saying, okay, on December 31st, 2026, anything 5 milligrams of THC or above for THC drinks, you can't do it.
Doesn't that seem a little contradictory, though, that this is posing such an imminent harm that we need to ban the above 5% drinks and get the others behind the walls of the dispensary, but the harm is not so imminent that we can wait a year to do it?
So what Governor DeWine's been pushing against this almost from the beginning, and he's dragged out all a bunch of these THC candies that the packaging is made to mimic popular candies, like regular candies. Like,
I know we've talked many times
nerdy
about
bears.
Gummy clusters, yeah. And it looks like these nerdy bear things.
Yeah, exactly. So there's, and as we'll talk about, there's a number of it bans advertising for marijuana that's aimed at children as well, but we can get into that. But also it bans. So that's where DeWine's big focus has been. And there's been one of the reasons this has been going on for so long and lawmakers haven't acted on it is there's been a big push by these. Platform Brewing up in Cleveland, you know, they're a brewery, but they also make THC drinks now. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of legal businesses that legally have been making THC drinks. And they're saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, if you just ban this outright, we have all this product here. We've invested a lot of money into this. And so if you just ban it starting tomorrow, well, we're out of luck. So this was sort of a compromise of, okay, we'll give you a year. And then about a year, and as of December 31st next year, you can't do it.
And lawmakers have kind of said that their hands were tied with Congress taking the action that they did take on the hemp-infused products. But they have kind of discussed whether or not should Congress kind of change its mind and allow some things like the drinks to come back and that they would then look at some kind of regulatory scheme that they could put into place.
So the drinks, I understand now you have a year that they can still be sold in bars, etc. The gummies and stuff like that, will that change within 90 days? Or is that...
90 days after the governor signs the bill, mm-hmm. if that's what ends up happening. And again, that's... So there could be lower level if it's like 0.3 or 0.2 percent THC concentration. That's legal. It's just these higher level, because it goes back to the definition of hemp and marijuana. Marijuana is 0.4, I think it's 0.4% THC, and after that it's considered marijuana. Mm-hmm. And so they're saying anything that high is marijuana, so therefore it can only be sold in a marijuana dispensary. But if it's lower level, then it's okay, well, that's hemp and that should be legal.
Okay, so if I go and try to buy those bear things that look, the packaging looks like nerd gummy clusters, will I be able to do that with lower levels, or but 90 days from now I can't in a convenience store, or what's happened?
Well, like, those examples that the governor dragged out are much higher levels of THC. Uh-huh. I forget exactly, but one of his examples was like like 10 milligrams or something.
Okay.
So those much higher gone, levels. Yeah. Which, to give you an idea, like the rough equivalent is, I think it's like a couple of milligrams is roughly equal to a beer.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're having 10 milligrams, that's going to get you messed up kind of quickly. It's designed for people with higher tolerances, or it's designed not to be eaten all at once, but they don't really write that on the bag, and it's made to intentionally look like candy. I think everyone would agree, at least all lawmakers agree, that sort of stuff should be regulated and or banned. The question is this other stuff like THC drinks, and then they wanted to pass marijuana. They didn't want to separate the issue of hemp and marijuana. And so there's been all this kind of infighting with the hemp and marijuana industries, and that's why it's taken so long to do something about this.
But that bag of bear things that is really high, can that be in a marijuana dispensary now?
It can, but the whole idea behind the business model is that it's not going to be in a dispensary, that it's largely unregulated. And so I don't think marijuana, and especially now given the restrictions in this bill about selling to children or products aimed at children are going to be banned, I don't think you're going to see those around if this passes.
Okay. Well, and then you mentioned that the other part of this bill relates to marijuana because it kind of is going hand in hand. So there's the hemp part and the marijuana part. And what did Republican Senator Steve Huffman, the bill's sponsor, say about that? Like, does this bill change what voters approved in 2023 when they passed the initiated statute, which was known as Issue 2 back then, legalizing recreational marijuana? Senator Huffman said that it leaves Issue 2 intact, right, Shane?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The argument from the Republicans is that voters passed Issue 2 because they want legalized marijuana, but they also want regulated legalized marijuana, you know, marijuana that they know has been tested and is what it says it is. They did not want all this extra stuff to come out with it, like these products that Jeremy talked about and that. So their argument is it is leaving everything intact. It's adding some parameters around it.
So what are the Democrats saying? Yeah.
Well, first, I mean, here's what the bill does. Mm-hmm. And so everything I said up until now has been hemp.
Yeah.
This is marijuana. This is what up until now has already been legal since 2023. So this is different. So among other things, 56 would prohibit people from bringing marijuana into Ohio from Michigan, where it's cheaper and it's been legalized for a while now. It would allow landlords to ban marijuana smoking, vaping, or growing on their property. It would erase protections in current law, prohibiting marijuana use as a reason for things like being rejected for housing or being disciplined by a state licensing board. Those protections would go away. Another thing is it would require everyone to store marijuana products in their original packaging. So you couldn't, like, if you bought an edible, you couldn't take it out of its original packaging and put it in other packaging. And they're saying, well, that's what medical marijuana already has, or the rules already in place. You can't, if you get fired for using marijuana, you can't get state unemployment benefits. So there's a whole bunch of marijuana regulations going into state law if the governor ends up signing this as is.
And the Democrats point out those issues as well. On the packaging that Jeremy brought up, Senator Bill DeMora, he's a Democrat from Columbus. He said, if you're doing home grow marijuana, what's the original packaging that you're going to put this in? So you actually have to put it in some kind of packaging. Well, that would be illegal, according to him, under this bill. The Senate President Rob McCauley was asked about the issue of transporting it from Michigan. And his argument is, though, that they don't have as high of testing standards as Ohio does. So, we're protecting the product that Ohio makes. We're making sure it lives up to Ohio's standards.
It's hard to see how that particular measure is a consumer-friendly one. It attempts to force Ohio consumers to pay a much higher price. And it's much more expensive in Ohio than it is Michigan. And it's hard for me to see how that's not just a sop to the industry.
And their argument is that and we'll see how this plays out because we know how it plays out. But, that these are low-level offenses and people aren't going to get caught up. You're not going to get a whole lot of court cases out of this. But it's just there for if it's being abused. That's the argument that Republicans have been making.
And even Senate President Rob McCauley told reporters that on those two things about bringing in out-of-state marijuana like from Michigan and the moving it to different packaging that he didn't inspect, that Ohioans would be, quote, heavily penalized for breaking those two rules. It's illegal, but they're making it seem like, it'll be a slap on the wrist.
Here's Senate Minority Leader, Democrat Nikki Antonio, talking to reporters. This is audio from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
This final agreement between the Republicans in the House and the Republicans in the Senate, what you see are elements of them being totally out of touch with everyday Ohioans.
And then Senate President Republican Rob McCauley said this in response as well.
It's not something that's going to be heavily penalized, but it's something that we need to make sure that they have the tools necessary in the event that they need to be able to enforce that.
So that's what you're talking about there. So a police officer is not going to come to your house and find your gummies that you put into a Tupperware container instead of in the original packaging and arrest you, right?
Right, and you have your Michigan bumper sticker, and it goes to your house to make sure you didn't, buy it from that state up north.
But the question is, though, if you're speeding and you get pulled over by a police officer and he finds that you don't have marijuana and that you have marijuana, but it's not in the original packaging, or that you just came from Michigan and you have marijuana in your car that you bought in Michigan, are you going to get caught up in the court system because of this law now?
I guess you could, right? What if you had marijuana from Michigan, not in the original packaging? Oh, no.
That's a double whammy. The other thing is I want to point out that the Senate Democrats are not happy about either was one of the previous bills had funds in it that people who don't have a lot of means could use, tap into if they want to go to court to expunge previous marijuana convictions. That was taken out of this particular bill. There is no money. So they're now the only people who have money are going to be the only ones who can expunge offenses that are now legal under Ohio law.
Yeah, and it certainly seems that in Ohio and across the country, what these referendums have shown is that nobody cares about weed anymore, at least use among adults. I think, you know, adolescent use is a big problem. But, you know, it's really hard to understand how you can carry the argument that this is what Ohio voters voted for in the first place.
You're listening to the All Sides Weekly Reporter Roundtable on 89.7 NPR News. With us is Marty Schladen from the Ohio Capital Journal, Shane Stegmiller from Hannah News Service, and Jeremy Pelzer from Cleveland.com. I didn't know we were going to talk about this for so long. There's so much in this bill. So the last thing, though, is the state will distribute more than $80 million in tax revenue to local governments that have dispensaries in their jurisdiction. It's known as the Host Community Cannabis Fund. Was that money held up, Shane? Or was it?
It was held up, according to the Republican leaders in the House and the Senate. That money was set aside as part of Issue 2. The argument was it wasn't properly appropriated out, so that they had to do legislation to distribute it, to have it be sent out. Right now, it's just being held. With the passage of this bill, once DeWine signs it, they'll be able to distribute to all the different communities that have marijuana dispensaries in their community. I think there was an argument, too, that it could go out immediately at once. They wouldn't have to wait 90 days, because I think one of the senators, it might have been Senator Huffman, made the comment of, you know, some of the local communities with marijuana dispensaries are going to get themselves a nice Christmas present because all these funds are going to start going out.
Yeah, I can remember City Council President Shannon Hardin a few weeks ago was like, where's our money? We want our money. We have these dispensaries here, right? He was asking for it.
And they've been complaining very loudly that they have not been getting this money, even though it's there. It's ready to go out. But the lawmaker said it was never appropriated, though. They have to appropriate it.
Okay. And then the last thing before we move on from cannabis and hemp, Jeremy, you mentioned this earlier, advertising and billboards. So there's been something within this bill to regulate the advertising. Is that right?
No.
Well,
no.
JCAR, this legislative panel, separately from 56, approved rules to bar billboards for marijuana. And the grounds were that the DeWine administration pushed this to bar billboards saying it would be aimed at children. So we're going to not allow any marijuana billboards because children would see it and they could purchase marijuana. So it's not just billboards, though. It's TV, radio, social media, in stadiums and arenas, public transit, other locations, too. And this is part of their rationale for this is Issue 2. When voters passed it, it said that regulators can adopt narrowly tailored restrictions preventing advertising aimed at minors. But, you know, the billboard industry says, well, this is a violation of the First Amendment. You know, if you can put up a sign outside of your dispensary saying marijuana for sale, why can't you put a billboard, you know, down the street saying marijuana for sale? They note, like, the U.S. Supreme Court has invalidated state laws that banned, I think, Rhode Island liquor stores from advertising their prices, and I think Virginia pharmacists too. And so I wouldn't be surprised if there was a lawsuit about this because they're saying it's you know, a First Amendment ground and it'll hurt their business.
And the industry, when they testified on this rule that, before this panel that reviews the rules come up by state agencies, they indicated that there is possibly a lawsuit that could come on First Amendment grounds.
You're listening to the All Sides Weekly Reporter Roundtable on 89.7 NPR News. Coming up, we're going to get an update on the governor's race, and we're also going to talk about Governor DeWine wants the Ohio Pharmacy Board to regulate kratom. That is when the Reporter Roundtable continues on 89.7 NPR News.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the All Sides Weekly Reporter Roundtable, an hour where we discuss all things Ohio politics. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. And with me in the studio, we have Jeremy Pelzer, chief politics reporter for Cleveland.com, Shane Stegmiller, a reporter for Hannah News Service, and Ohio Capital Journal reporter Marty Schladen. I wanted to move to, you know, while we were talking about drugs the governor opposes, we just spent a lot of time talking about hemp and marijuana. Governor DeWine had ordered the Ohio Pharmacy Board to immediately ban kratom. So first of all, I guess, who can start by telling me what kratom is? And am I saying it correctly? Kratom?
Yeah.
Okay.
You are. You got it. So kratom is a plant. It's from Southeast Asia, and it's been used for a while now, and it's been promoted by some as an aid for opioid withdrawal. Mm. And so it's a low level. It has, you know, at low level, it's been offered as sort of a natural remedy. But the issue, at least for Mike DeWine, is that now there's a synthetic version that's a lot more potent, and it's called 7-OH. So it has opioid-like properties, and people are saying that they're getting addicted to it. So Governor DeWine is now saying, okay, I'm issuing an executive order banning this. So the natural form, the original form, he said, okay, we'll let that go through the standard rulemaking process, and we'll see, you know, if we can, how we want to regulate that and allow that. But in the meantime, this synthetic version, we're going to ban.
Is this something that is another issue where it's like state by state, everyone treats kratom differently, kind of the way they do with hemp and marijuana?
It is.
Okay. So is Ohio right now doing nothing, but other states have done some things? Like, where did this come from, I guess, for DeWine?
Well, DeWine's been pushing on this for a while. Last summer, he attempted to try and get the Board of Pharmacy to do something on it. The Board of Pharmacy did not end up, I believe, acting on it at that time. And so he's actually been also asking lawmakers to address it as well. And I think they've had discussions. But this last week, he decided to issue executive orders aimed at this synthetic version of it. And again, working with the Board of Pharmacy to try and get them to adopt rules and that would, you know, prevent the selling of this.
Do we think the Board of Pharmacy will take action then this time? Or do they have to because he had an executive order?
Well, they have an executive order now, and that clearly the governor thought that they weren't moving fast enough.
I see.
And so
much
now,
like with hemp. So he
much
just
like with
he's
hemp.
He's yeah. like he's like, I only have a few more months in office, less than a year. I'm going to start doing things.
Right. He's like, you know, we got to get this done now. Mm-hmm. Obviously, executive orders are only in force for as long as the governor who's in office enforces them. So if Governor Ramaswamy or Governor Acton or whoever succeeds DeWine comes in and says, I don't want this, then it will be up to the Board of Pharmacy if DeWine wants some longer lasting permanent rules in place. But in the meantime, he said, we got to do something about this now.
Yeah, this executive order will only be in effect for 180 days because it's an emergency executive order. Although the Board of Pharmacy, they met Friday. They said that they are going to explore a permanent rule while this 180 days is going on. So they're looking into the issue a little bit more.
Okay. I don't know if I'm alone and I had never heard of kratom. Maybe I just missed it. So now I know. Now I've learned more. Thank you for educating me. Let's move on to a looming deadline that is happening right now. It's extending the Affordable Care Act subsidies before the end of the year. And Marty, you've been writing about this. Do you know where Ohio's congressional delegation stands on the issue? What have they been saying related to whether we're going to be able to extend the Affordable Care Act subsidies or not?
Well, Senator John Husted proposed an alternative. I think that's where a lot of people in the GOP are right now, is they can't get their people on board to extend these subsidies, which I think some of them see just as another aspect of the Affordable Care Act that they never liked. So what Husted proposed on November 20th was freezing the amount of money at its existing level, even though more people are taking advantage of these subsidies every year and healthcare is just getting more expensive every year. He wants to freeze that amount of money for a couple of years and then devise an alternative. But it's hard to see, you know, and a lot of the other Republican proposals are, they talk about putting a fixed amount in health savings accounts. But for more than 500,000 Ohioans, what they're looking at is seeing the average person seeing their health care costs more than double into the new year.
And this is something that was the crux of the government shutdown. And basically, the government shutdown ended because there was an agreement that there would be some sort of vote basically this week, right?
Last week.
Oh, last week.
Yeah, they took place on Wednesday. The Democrats proposed a three-year extension. They couldn't get this was in the Senate. Mm-hmm. They couldn't get the votes. And then the Republicans proposed an alternative that I think involved these monies for health savings accounts, and that didn't pass either. So
So the vote happened that they were promised. It just didn't go their way.
Right, and that was expected. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very likely now that these subsidies are going to go away at the beginning mm-hmm. of the year. And with the current political dynamic in place, I don't see anything happening to ameliorate it. Mm.
We are talking on the Weekly Reporter Roundtable with Marty Schladen from the Ohio Capital Journal and Jeremy Pelzer, chief politics reporter for Cleveland.com, Shane Stegmiller with the Hanna News Service. So Governor DeWine is term limited, and the race is on for his successor. Republican Vivek Ramaswamy has received endorsements from a slew of Republicans, key leaders like U.S. Senator John Husted, but not Governor DeWine. Here is what Governor DeWine had to say when asked by reporters, and this audio comes from the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau.
Look, we're still having discussions. We're still having a walk the way you get a better understanding, of his positions, what his vision is. And I would say the discussion should be good.
Jeremy, is it unusual that DeWine has not endorsed Ramaswamy?
I don't think it's unusual if you understand that Governor Mike DeWine has, in his own way, not exactly been the biggest fan of Vivek Ramaswamy. Mm-hmm. There was speculation for a long time that Lieutenant Governor Jim Tressel, who DeWine appointed earlier this year, there was a lot of speculation he might run against Ramaswamy because, you know, the DeWine camp wasn't the biggest fan. DeWine is more of an old-school Republican, establishment Republican. Ramaswamy is more of a Trump populist Republican. And obviously, Jim Tressel decided not to run. I think it's safe to say Ramaswamy, right, as of right now, is the presumptive Republican nominee. Mm-hmm. At the same time, if you listen to that, what I took from that, and I haven't talked to the governor to follow up, it sounds like the governor is saying, we're having discussions about whether we're on board with some policies before mm-hmm. I endorse you. So get on board with some policies that I think are important that I think you should do in office, and then that's the cost, the price of me endorsing you.
And it's kind of interesting the way he phrases it. He says, I'm going to endorse the Republican nominee. Mm. But he doesn't usually say Vivek. He mm-hmm. just says, I'm going to. So and
could be anyone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Technically the filing deadline is not until February, so somebody there are other candidates, and there could be a surprise candidate that comes out. But, Vivek's got a lot of the endorsements. He's got the state party behind him, which actually that was another thing where the state party voted to endorse Vivek way ahead of the election. And there was talk behind the scenes that, you know, DeWine and his people were urging the party not to take that step at that time to kind of let things play out. And I think at that point, Jim Tressel was a rumored candidate, so mm-hmm. I think that was kind of also to keep Tressel from getting blocked out of any consideration. But
do you think DeWine has any loyalty to Dr. Amy Acton, even though she's running as a Democrat? It was his former health director. They were side by side during the COVID-19 pandemic. Do you feel like, is there any chance in the world he could endorse her?
No, there's no chance he's going to endorse her, not as long as she's running as a Democrat. There's respect there. There may be a little bit of loyalty. He was asked about one of the huge attack lines from Republicans and even Vivek is that Amy Acton is the shutdown queen, that she was responsible mm-hmm. for all the shutdowns during COVID. And DeWine was asked about that, and he didn't quite. He's like, I'm not going to criticize, you know, any line of attack, particular line of attack, but, you know, the buck stops here. I'm the one who ultimately made those decisions. And he also kind of bristled at the word shutdown because he didn't see it quite that way.
And that argument helps U.S. Senator John Houston, too, who is also, if you look at all the DeWine briefings during the coronavirus crisis, there were two people standing behind DeWine, and one was Amy Acton, the other was John Houston. And so the same argument can help out John Houston. But I think Shane's right that while DeWine is too much of a Republican to endorse Amy Acton outright, he's also not going to turn around and take shots at her the way many Republicans are doing.
He's not going to go out there and say, yeah, I would never have issued these orders if Amy Acton had not have done that and it's all her fault or anything. He's not going to do that.
Especially because it would be so awkward for him to do, because then the question is, so Governor, why'd you allow this to happen?
Yeah.
You're criticizing it. Like, he's right.
He'd be criticizing himself. Yeah.
You know, he could have fired Amy Acton at any time if he didn't like what she was doing.
Yeah. In a one-on-one interview with Cleveland News 5 reporter Morgan Trow, DeWine said that a Democrat could win the state. Marty, I found that to be an interesting comment for him to make.
I think it is interesting. And I wonder, back to our earlier conversation, whether right now DeWine doesn't see that he's got some negotiating leverage with Ramaswamy, because the polling, I think Acton's even up in one poll at this point. So I think that Ramaswamy is going to need DeWine's support, and DeWine's thinking about his legacy. He's geared his entire political life, I think, toward being governor of Ohio for a couple of terms. So that might be one of the things he and Ramaswamy are talking about is, what are you going to do if you get in my chair?
There's a new Emerson College poll that came out last week. That's what you're referring to. And it's a very close race. It shows Amy Acton pulling ahead by one percentage point. So basically statistically tied. Jeremy, how significant is that poll?
We're a year out from the election. I mean, but a lot of people have not been really paying attention. I mean, it's, I would say
Amy Acton liked that poll.
Amy Acton sure liked it. And I mean, she should tout it. If I was her campaign manager, I'd be touting it too, because one of the big knocks against Amy Acton is, oh, she's unelectable. Too many people don't like her over coronavirus policies and other things. And now, it's a good counter to put out polls like this saying, no, she's electable. She is a viable candidate. And therefore, you should give us money and campaign and volunteer and do all the other stuff, because this is a real race. I think Ramaswamy went all out this year when he started running for governor. He just steamrolled the primary field. He quickly got a Trump endorsement. He quickly got the state party's endorsement. And he was really effective at locking that nomination in. But one of the big things to do in politics for the political campaign is timing. When you crest, you have to make sure that your political support is at maximum on election day. And now that he's kind of on top, he's on top of the mountain, there's now about a year for people to knock him off the mountain.
He climbed the mountain too soon.
We'll see if it's too soon, but he's on top of this mountain now, and now he's got to be king of the mountain now for about 11 months. And it just opens him up to attack.
And that 11 months in a campaign is a long time. So much could happen. I mean, the electorate's already getting kind of not too happy with the status quo, and who knows how they're going to feel next year. This is a Republican state now, but if the economy keeps going the way it is, people start blaming Trump. Ramaswamy's connected to Trump. Maybe that rolls onto him. Who knows? For Amy Acton, she's touting in the polls. One of the questions that she will point out is her handling of the coronavirus pandemic, and generally giving her good marks for it. But that's now. Wait till 50 million of ads are running every day on the radio, on social media, just completely carpet bombing her on this issue. Will voters still look at her that way then?
Jeremy, you wrote that about some of Amy Acton and the Democratic Party's messaging related to the Jeffrey Epstein scandal. Has this been an effective campaign strategy with regards to the way they're basically using Jeffrey Epstein as an attack on Ramaswamy?
So far, at least the political scientists I've talked to say no. And to be fair, it's still very early, and a lot of times political campaigns will not put out their A-list campaign attacks just yet. But especially with Epstein in the news, with Congress voting to demand that the Justice Department release the Epstein files, all of the Epstein files, the Democratic Party and Acton's campaign have tried to make hay out of the fact that during Ramaswamy's 2024 presidential campaign, he said, you know, release all the Epstein files. We got to get it all out in the open. And now that since he's run for governor and since he got Donald Trump's endorsement, he's been pretty silent about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, After Congress passed it and Trump basically recognized political reality and belatedly, grudgingly said, okay, release all of them, then Ramaswamy said, hey, okay, this is a fine move. But the Democrats have been attacking him, basically insinuating that he's been silent because of Trump and he's trying to protect Trump. Another issue is that one of Ramaswamy's presidential super PACs got $100,000 from a billionaire associate of Epstein, who was apparently involved in the sex ring, at least alleged to have been involved. And they terminated the campaign without, or the PAC, excuse me, the super PAC, without giving away the money. Now, Ramaswamy's own campaign, they took about $6,500 from this guy and gave it to a battered women's shelter. But we're only talking about the super PAC. And so there's sort of like these kind of ancillary issues. Like, no one is saying that Vivek Ramaswamy is directly involved in the Jeffrey Epstein sex ring. No one's saying that. It's sort of these more ancillary issues and how he and people around him are responding to this and acting about it. That's what they're trying to make hay out of.
And this issue is a wedge among Republicans, too. There are, you know, because people like Ramaswamy and Donald Trump said, we're going to release these files. And then they've done this complete about face. And, you know, it may not be landing yet, but this story is going to live through a lot more news cycles between now and Election Day 2026. So, you know, we'll see. And like Jeremy said, they're probably going to trot out other approaches to attack Ramaswamy as we get into next year.
Coming up, we're going to talk about child care costs, utility costs, and also using unclaimed funds to build the Browns a stadium. That is when the Reporter Roundtable continues from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides and the Weekly Reporter Roundtable. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking today with Shane Stegmiller, reporter for Hannah News Service, Jeremy Pelzer, chief politics reporter for Cleveland.com, and Ohio Capital Journal reporter Marty Schladen. And for all those people who were furious, and then they were furiously trying to recoup their unclaimed funds from the state because they were unhappy about the state's plan to use money toward the Cleveland Browns' new stadium, well, there is an update on that. Jeremy, what is the latest on whether the Browns are getting this new stadium?
So the only hurdle left, the only significant hurdle to get for the Browns to build this new stadium in suburban Brook Park is this lawsuit filed by a Democratic law firm led by former Attorney General Mark Dan against the state's plan to use $600 million basically by raiding the state's unclaimed property fund. And what that is, so if you have an inactive bank account or like an uncashed check for several years, under state law, the business or the bank or whomever has to turn that money over to the state for safekeeping. And it just has been sitting in the state fund. Mm-hmm. There's $4.8 billion in it, and it just kind of sits there. Some money's been there for decades. And it's not just checks. Sometimes it's like assets. Sometimes it's like jewelry and all kinds of stuff. So the state lawmakers trying to find where can we get $600 million to help out the Browns that they're asking for to help build this stadium said, oh, there's billions of dollars lying around. Let's take some of that and let's take a little more, too, to help fund pro stadium projects in the future. And they also said, okay, starting in 2036, 10 years from now, any money that people don't claim within 10 years of it going into the fund automatically goes to the state and you can't get it back.
Hmm.
And so Mark Dan's law firm says, that's you're taking private property. It's violating the takings clause of the U.S. and Ohio constitutions, not to mention a whole other a number of alleged constitutional violations. So that lawsuit is still active. But what they sought was an injunction or a temporary restraining order saying, hey, the initial $600 million is going to go to the Browns on January 1st. We want a court order to prevent that.
Mm-hmm.
And the court said, no, we're not going to issue that order because you haven't proved it, that this is something that, because all the plaintiffs, they're representing ordinary Ohioans who have money in this unclaimed property fund. The judge said, well, they could just file right now to get their money out because they can still do it. You know, there's nothing like that. Their money is part of the $600 million that's going away. So the lawsuit itself on the constitutionality, that's still ongoing. But at least this initial attempt, this last ditch attempt to stop that $600 million from going out, that issue is now dead. Now, except...
there's
except,
always a but. Okay.
It's now on appeal.
Yes.
Mark
Dan is appealing?
Yes.
Okay.
Dan's law firm is appealing. So we'll see if that gets overturned. So there's a pretty big but. But at least as it stands now, that money will go out as planned.
All right. It's like the issue that will never go away.
Never.
All right. And I'm related to football while we're here. Marty, heading into the college and professional football playoff season is timely for a story you wrote about gambling, specifically the human toll. Can you tell us what you learned related to gambling?
The human toll's been high. In all of the 38 states that legalize sports betting pursuant to a 2018 U.S. Supreme Court ruling, and I think most of those 38 states, including Ohio, legalized online sports gambling. And what's been found is that, you know, the average credit rating for everybody in those states, not just gamblers, has worsened. Cases of suicidal ideation and attempted suicides have gone up. Bankruptcies have gone up. You know, so it's created a real public health problem, and quite frankly, I think it was predictable. And you know, Mike DeWine, the governor, is now saying he wished he hadn't signed Ohio's bill.
Mm. Yeah, and it's really hard to close Pandora's box once you open it. Right?
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not saying this is, you know, the same as the opioid epidemic, but once you create it, I spoke to an Ohio State clinician who was really sharp, and she sees these people, and she likened it to drugs and alcohol in the sense that when people develop gambling problems, they alter their brains, and they create mm-hmm. these reward pathways, and once you've created that pathway, it's hard to uncreate it. Anybody who's tried to quit smoking knows about this.
So Governor DeWine also tried to kind of rein it in a little bit when it comes to prop betting, like the smaller bets where you bet on every single pitch of a baseball game and stuff like that. Was he able to successfully do that?
Yeah, I think he did that, didn't he? Or did he
so
not?
So what he did is he's been, long story short, for some reason, it's easier in Ohio to have the pro sports leagues request it. Such a ban on prop betting than to have state regulators do it themselves, because then you have to go through this whole rulemaking process, but it streamlines it if the pro sports leagues ask for it themselves. So far Major League Baseball has done that at DeWine's urging. He says he's now talking with the NFL about requesting it. And part of it is that these leagues don't want to take action in the middle of their season. So obviously the baseball season's over. The NFL's, you know, going to wrap up their season in a couple of months. We're in the middle of hockey and basketball season. So you'll probably see this staggered based on when their season ends.
Okay. Also, I believe they limited how much you can pay out on certain of the bets. So
lower the amount.
Yeah, because there was the issue. There are a couple of Cleveland Indians pitchers who were...
Guardians. Oh, look at you dated yourself there.
I know. Well, Major League is one of my favorite baseball movies.
Okay.
So they had the Guardians pitchers that were indicted, and, you know, what they were seeing was people were betting on each pitch And suddenly there was a whole bunch of bets that the first pitch is going to be a ball. And then the, you know, pitcher comes out and throws it like way out into the dirt or something like that. So if you bet like $10,000 that this first pitch is going to be a ball and you're going to get paid out.
It's
so
quite
I think it's only limited to like a couple hundred dollars or so that you can get paid out on
for Major League Baseball. And that's why these prop bets are seen as so dangerous, because it's not like the old days when they would have to throw the entire game and make their team lose. Now it's, well, the first pitch of the third inning will be a ball. Well, in the scheme of things, if it is a ball and you throw a ball on purpose, it doesn't materially, at least in their minds, affect the outcome of the game, because it's just a ball. Then you can throw a strike after that. And so that's why it's seen as so dangerous. There was also the NBA scandal, of course, which also has a load of Ohio connections that involved, Trent Rozier, formerly a high school star in Northeast Ohio. He was arrested. You had others arrested for, and that was also involving prop bets where he apparently faked an illness.
Then
he had an associate allegedly tip off these bettors, and then they placed these prop bets because you can't score any points if you're not playing, and that's the allegation at least.
So my concern, though, is that this, you know, these threats to the integrity of the different games is what's getting the lion's share of the attention, where there's this public health aspect that affects a lot more Ohioans. And, you know, and you just add that to all the other ways that average Ohioans are just getting hammered in the marketplace. And that's a big concern to me.
I said Trent Rozier. I really meant Terry Rozier. And I should say that he's pled not guilty.
Okay. Yes, I didn't know his name, but thank you for the clarification. Yes. Before we run out of time, Marty, you wrote about this. In September, Governor DeWine announced the start of a $10 million child care program. Can you give us an update of what you learned about that money in your reporting?
Well, there's an outfit here in Columbus called Scio Analysis, and they regularly survey this panel of academic economists they have. And they looked at that program and just asked, you know, several questions. Basically, will this help the kids? Will it improve their educational outcomes? And the consensus was it would, but at only $10 million, the effects are going to be marginal. You just can't do a whole lot in a state the size of Ohio with $10 million.
Okay. So will this help financially strapped families? Reduce child care costs, or is it just
it will to the extent that businesses and people participate. The proposal is that, you know, the families cover 40%, businesses cover 40% of high quality child care, and the state covers 10%. But that was a question that some of the economists who said they were uncertain is, you know, how many businesses and people are going to be willing to participate in this? But even when if they all do, $10 million doesn't get you very far.
I neglected to say this earlier when we were talking about the governor having the hemp and marijuana bill on his desk, and that he has endorsed it and said he was going to sign it. But there's other bills waiting to be signed too, right, Jeremy? Has he taken any action on the bill related to absentee ballots and whether there's a grace period?
He has not.
Okay. He has that bill though, right?
He has the bill. There's a bunch of bills that was one of them that passed earlier this month, and he has 10 days after he gets the bill officially, and for whatever reason, it takes several days sometimes to get these bills to him. So he's on the clock now, and we'll see what he does. Now, it's interesting because before, when he signed legislation to require photo ID to vote, he said basically, this resolves the issue. You know, we're good. And now the legislature's saying, no, we're not good. You know, so right now, if you mail in your ballot, the Board of Elections, if they get that ballot up to 4 days after the election, as long as it's postmarked before Election Day, they'll still count it. And this says, nope, any mail that we get after Election Day, that's it. We're going to throw it in the trash. It doesn't count. And Democrats are saying, well, that's not fair. And the Republicans are saying, well, it is fair, because if I show up to my polling place the day after the election, they're not going to let me vote. So why should we allow it if it's being mailed in?
Has the governor made any indication, Shane?
So I asked him about that. That was one of my questions to him the other day. And he kind of punted on the question. He said he's looking at it. And somebody else asked him, well, how does that square with what Jeremy was talking about, how you said, when you sign the photo ID bill, we're done with election stuff for now. And he said it's a consideration. And they're going to send him other they're going to send him other elections related bills. I'm going to be writing about something here that has a bunch of other stuff in it, that like banning drop boxes that you can currently return your ballot to. So they're going to keep sending them elections bills because this is a huge issue, especially the federal one. The Trump administration's pushing on some of these areas.
And it just bears repeating every time any of these bills comes up is that, for example, Secretary of State Frank LaRose repeatedly talks about election integrity and implies that, you know, we need these things to maintain safe elections or secure elections. And he's been unable to show anything but just vanishingly rare voter fraud in Ohio.
All right. Well, we're going to leave it there. Thank you to Ohio Capital Journal reporter Marty Schladen. Thanks, Marty.
Thank you, Amy.
And Jeremy Pelzer, chief politics reporter at Cleveland.com. Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks, Amy.
And Shane Stegmiller, reporter for Hannah News Service. Thanks, Shane.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This has been the Reporter Roundtable from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Juravich.